Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan. I'm here today with Andrew, Tommy, and believe it or not, Nigel was able to actually make it. How are y'all doing? Are you excited after that week one?
I was. The problem is that week two is going to be such a letdown.
You can't get excited about Bristol?
If it was anybody other than Tennessee, maybe.
True. I agree. No, I'm excited. It was a good week. It was a very good first week.
I could actually see that match being interesting now because I was expecting Tennessee to just run over Virginia Tech, but after last week, I don't know what the hell to think about Tennessee. No. Anyway.
Yeah, I think we got an interesting Thursday night game coming up too, though. Even though I think Louisville wins going away, it was interesting to see how much offense Syracuse put up this weekend. Mm-hmm.
They play Friday.
Is it Friday? My bad. It was Thursday.
No, there's no Thursday night games this week because the NFL starts.
Yes. No one likes the NFL.
Well, I certainly don't. The Tom Brady League? No thanks.
Tom Brady's not even playing for 4 weeks.
And yet he's still
his league. Still his league.
He's still the only thing that people
Sorry,
talk about.
Jimmy Garoppolo's going to get a baptism under fire from the Arizona Cardinals. He may crap his pants.
All right. So, obviously I was in Ireland. Missed quite a bit, to be honest, because there were so many exciting games. There were quite a few big upsets. But let's go ahead and talk about the games that I was able to see. So Georgia Tech and Boston College was the kickoff of the whole season. And I think it was a little disappointing for everybody. I mean, Georgia Tech edged it out, but as you've pointed out, we saw a lot of the same mistakes that we saw last year, and that doesn't bode well for us moving forward. Do you think that was a good win, something that we can hang our hats on, or are you worried about our future prospects this season?
Yeah, I was great to get a win. You know, you really don't want to complain that much about winning a game, especially against a team like Boston College, who statistically had one of the top defenses last year. But watching that offense, there were some definite strides made in terms of pass protection. We threw the ball better than we've thrown in a long time. Still, you know, Justin's got his mechanic issues like he does. But the thing that killed me was the run game. You know, we saw the same issues with the offensive line. Couldn't get to the second level. They couldn't get hats on linebackers. And the perimeter blocking wasn't very good. So, you know, next week against Mercer, it really shouldn't matter. But the week after against Vandy, who's got a pretty talented defense, and then the week after that against Clemson are really going to kind of be the big games to see if, you know, maybe it was just first game jitters or if we're just in for the kind of same kind of season we had last year.
And I guess I'm also worried about the defense because, as we brought up before, the offense we were going up against was pretty terrible. And we did pretty good at keeping them in check, but I did see that one big run and a couple other plays that really terrified me. I don't know. Nigel, Tommy, is there anything you want to see from the team that would make you feel more confident week two against Mercer?
Maybe a tackle or a block every now and then.
But. Yeah, I was going to say wrapping up. There were some definite issues with just wrapping up. They were actually in the right spots, you know, the right alignments, but they just weren't wrapping people up. And, you know, that means the play would go on for another 5 or 6 yards before the next guy could get in the play. So that would be nice.
Also, there was about zero pressures during that game from the front four. So I'd love to see that actually start.
There was one legitimate pressure because they got an interception or a fumble. I don't remember what it was called.
It was a fumble because I was wearing a horse head and I thought it was a sack, but they got the ball back, so it was definitely a fumble.
Okay. I can't remember what it ended up being because it was weird how it came out of his hand, but they did get one pressure, so we got to give them that.
I think the most important fact that Logan just brought up was that he was wearing a horse head.
I got pictures. I can prove it. Horse head and a yellow afro. I am pissed off that ESPN couldn't get me on TV, and yet everybody wanted to take pictures with me in the stands, even though I was in the Boston College section. Go figure. All right. Well, I wanted to talk about that game pretty much because it was the only game I got to see. So I'm going to let y'all believe it or not, Ireland doesn't show American networks over there for some reason. So I'm kind of going to let y'all take it for the rest of the games that we talked about this week. Obviously, we saw quite a few upsets, especially in the SEC. Everybody's talking about those big games. I think Oklahoma lost. LSU against Wisconsin was kind of a big deal. Mississippi State lost to Southern Alabama. So I don't know how any of us could have predicted something like that. I'm surprised that that's the one getting the least notice. Clearly, that's what you get when you get a lot of big matchups against big teams. Tommy, what stands out to you as the biggest upset or the upset that has the biggest impact on the playoff picture?
I'm going to go ahead and steal Nigel's thunder and say that even though I don't really consider it an upset, Texas beating Notre Dame, as far as the playoff picture, because the Big 12 had such a rough week. I mean, when Oklahoma loses to Houston, and granted, Houston's very good, as they've shown, but, you know, when Oklahoma's supposed to be the flag bearer and they get beat by a non-Power 5 conference, that really hurts. But for Texas to step up, you know, big Sunday night game against, you know, the number 10 rated Notre Dame, and to go to double overtime is really big for not just Texas, but the entire Big 12. And I think it also answers, you know, 70% of the questions we had about Texas. You know, could their defense continue to improve and get better? Could they figure out what to do with the quarterback situation that they had going on there? And do they have enough skill positions around there to help out? And I think they answered all of those. Their defense is very talented. And the two quarterback, the way they use a two quarterback system, can be effective. Notre Dame's defense, while I think they did take a step back from last year, is still a pretty talented defense. And Texas was able to put up a lot of points very quickly on them, both running and passing with both quarterbacks. So I think Texas beating Notre Dame on such a big stage has the greatest impact from week one.
Well, Nigel, I guess Tommy is trying to take yours early, but do you want to reemphasize that, or there are plenty of other upsets to pick from?
This is true. We had a nice little buffet of upsets. I actually hate to call them upsets because, no offense, I think this week more than any other has kind of reinforced for me, I don't like preseason rankings. I don't even like rankings till conference play begins, because a lot of these teams were either ranked too high or ranked as high based on biased or perceived thoughts, or I don't know. It was like some of the, like Tennessee being ranked 9, and obviously if you've seen this week's poll, even though they won, they, you know, they suffer some backlash from that, you know, just barely eking out that win over Appalachian State. I just don't like all these teams, you know, being ranked so high, and I think that combined with as many of them weren't upsets as maybe the expected winner didn't win. I don't think it, unless it's like a crazy margin, like you said, with like a Southern Alabama or a Mississippi State, I don't really see those as upset. The one that stood out for me was definitely LSU Wisconsin. I mean, chatter's already started after week one. It's Les Miles on the way out, because if he leaves, LSU is not going to settle for just any coach. Who are they going to go get? And that could end up having ripple effects throughout all of college football. So for me, that's definitely the upset that kind of stands out the most, just because of the ramifications attached to that one loss.
That's true. And I think that's also the one that everybody's pointing to in the SEC as being a big sign that it's not as strong. The conference itself is not as strong as people thought it was. That in the Ole Miss game, but I do like your point that you can't make a lot out of these preseason rankings, and I always get upset when people make a big deal about, oh, they lost week one, and they didn't lose to a bad team, they lost to a good team. Mississippi State's the only one I can think of that you can't really rationale away that loss, you know. if those teams win the rest of their games, they're still fine. But they do have to go through the SEC. Andrew, so we've kind of hit on the big ones. Do you have another upset you want to talk about?
I think that Houston-Oklahoma game. You know, that one really surprised, you know, it surprised me because you give Houston credit, but you still unfortunately fall into that bias of, well, it's Oklahoma. How can they lose a game like that? But, I mean, Houston came out to play. They played great on defense. You know, Greg Ward Jr. came out and showed that he hadn't missed a beat from what they did last year. You know, they bottled up that vaunted run game of Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine. You know, they held him to 2.7 yards a carry. You know, they just were all over Baker Mayfield. And I think it sets up great for Houston. I think it really pushes Houston in a good direction. You know, they're really not going to be challenged much again. They get Louisville in the second to last week of the season. And honestly, I see them being undefeated going into that game. And if Houston runs the table, I don't know how you can argue to keep that Houston team out of the playoffs. I mean, they'd be undefeated. Two Power 5 wins over an Oklahoma who still has a shot to win the Big 12 and a Louisville team that, I mean, yeah, it was Charlotte, but just came in and absolutely mollywhopped Charlotte last week.
Well, and Louisville's going to have some more chances to prove themselves coming down the line. They get to play FSU, Clemson. But you don't think that that Houston's going to need the rest of the conference to perform? They just need to –
I think it'll help. You know, I think if looking at their schedule, if you know, they don't play USF, they play USF in the championship game, and I think USF is the other best team in that conference. You know, they do get Navy, who came out and won big, but it was against Fordham, so you don't really know much about them. Their schedule doesn't really do them a lot of favors. Connecticut was terrible. They lost to Maine. Texas State knocked off your Ohio Bobcats. Logan, I'm sorry. Cincinnati's pretty good, but I think they will. I think, you know, if they end up with a couple of those AAC teams at 7-5 and making bowl games, and Houston's undefeated, they'll have a chance. But, you know, if that league implodes, then obviously it's going to be a really tough sell, even if they are undefeated.
Nobody brought up Eastern Washington over Washington State. Did anybody actually catch that game?
I didn't. It's a Pac-12 after dark kind of thing. It's after you've been up since 7 a.m. for the Georgia Tech game, you're kind of like, okay, I'm tired. I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, you old man.
I only had two TVs this weekend, so that was not on one of either of my two.
As compared to the 8 that you usually have. Fair enough.
I mean, we saw the same thing from Washington State last year. They lost to Portland State, and it still ended up with an 8-win season.
True.
I'm just asking from a Eastern Washington standpoint, are they something that we need to be watching out for at the lower tier?
Yeah, they've actually had some pretty good seasons recently though, right? Because
they've been a really good FCS team. Now their field is the ugliest thing in the history of mankind.
Yes, we touched on that last week.
Wait, isn't there a purple field? A
good program.
No, they're the red and black field, Nigel.
I don't know, but somebody has a purple field, I thought.
Central Arkansas is alternating purple and gray.
Ugh.
And then Coastal Carolina, I believe, is teal and another color.
I don't.
I think it's orange.
Oh, God.
All right. We're going to move back to the upper level. So I feel like we're going to be touching on some of the same games we just talked about. But I really quick want to get your opinions because, again, I didn't see any of the matches, so I'd like to know more about them. What were the most exciting matches, and what were the most disappointing matches this week? Nigel,
I think the most overlooked match that was a really great game to watch was Texas A&M and UCLA. If you watched that game at all, I mean, you never knew which way it was going to go. UCLA trailed for most of the game. They had a chance there at the end. I mean, it went to overtime, and incomplete pass that touched the guy's hands in the end zone. But if you look at the matchup, I mean, total yards, UCLA put up 468 and Texas A&M put up 442. So, I mean, just tons of offense. But the defense also, lots of big hits, lots of pressures, lots of big hits and broken tackles. So really great game to watch. The one thing I will say is I am just as confused about both those teams after the game as I was before. I think they still have a lot of questions. I think UCLA comes out with even more questions with Rosen throwing the three interceptions in that game. And two of them were clearly his fault, too.
Yeah, I think the SEC as a whole, especially some of the teams on the lower echelon of the conference, really didn't do them any favors. You know, obviously we talk about the LSU game, but, you know, I mean, Florida beat UMass 24-7, and UMass isn't a very good team. You know, especially for a Florida program that a lot of people think is going to compete in the East. Obviously, the Southern Alabama win over Mississippi State's another one. You know, Louisiana Tech only lost by one to Arkansas, and then Southern Miss overturned a 35-17 deficit by scoring 27 unanswered points to just wallop Kentucky, which, you know, that's going to do a lot of damage to Kentucky praying to try to make a bowl game.
Yeah, I did not see that coming for Kentucky. I mean, we knew
to mention the 36 unanswered points by FSU last night.
That's a great drive chart to watch. Fumble, touchdown, interception, touchdown. cannot turn the ball over.
True. Exciting for me was TCU South Dakota State. South Dakota State was in it basically to the end of the game. And, I mean, I just never heard of them. And for the longest time, I thought they were talking about North Dakota State and the Bison, just because they had done so well in the at the FCS level, you know, year after year. But it wasn't. And then I was just like, I'm just kind of surprised. Also, Kenny Hill debuting for TCU. I didn't think he could play already. Does anybody know why he's playing already? That surprised me.
Was he a graduate transfer?
That's the only thing I can think of, because he was just at Texas A&M last year. So I was just like, when I saw that he was the starter, I turned into the game and I was like, yeah, that's him. He has to be a graduate transfer, though. That's the only way he could, that's the only way he'd be able to play. I think disappointing. Oh, God, that's going to be rough.
I mean, I can start with mine. I actually thought...
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I mean, as a Bama fan, you like it when your team wins by that margin. But as a football fan, those are really sad games to watch. Like, when the other team is just getting walloped, it's like, okay, yeah. I kind of feel bad for USC at this point. You know, and really, it makes you, you know, I think Alabama's going to do great this season and all that. But as far as watching that game, it's like, that's one of those games where you just turn it off, because it's like, I don't need to watch the rest of this. They're gonna slaughter them. Yeah. So that would probably be my disappointing game. Hell, I didn't even see it, but I kept getting the reports on my phone, and I was just like, yeah, I don't even need to look. It felt like they were up by 35 at the half. It was ridiculous.
That was a disappointing game for me. Tulane, Wake Forest. It was just awful to watch. I don't even know why I couldn't turn it. It was just really
why
bad
would you,
game.
You okay? Wake Forest is involved, and then you put in Tulane. Like, what compelled you to check that game out of all things?
Because the Georgia Southern coach Fritz went to Tulane, so I was like, you know, obviously it's going to take him a while to get his people in there. He's obviously instituting a new offensive system. But oh my God, it was so bad. It was so bad. I keep waiting. I guess I keep waiting for Walford to kind of take off, the quarterback for Wake Forest, and he just doesn't. He just replace him. He's not good. This is his third year. He's just not good.
Well, they don't exactly have a lot of talent to go to in Wake Forest.
That's true.
But another game that I kind of thought of, I guess from a talent standpoint, I was disappointed that Clemson didn't crush Auburn more. And I guess maybe that's an exciting thing for Auburn. But, yeah, fuck Auburn. I hate them.
Well, they put up yards, though, because Mike Williams had like 170 yards receiving by himself.
I mean, they put up some semblance of yards. I think what is it? I had it up a second ago, and now it's gone. I guess because I got sick of looking at Auburn. but no. Anyway, this is just me and Nigel bouncing back and forth. And Andrew, Tommy, what were your most exciting and disappointing games?
I mean, the disappointing one to me is the beginning of the Bronco Mendenhall era at Virginia, where, I mean, they were never in that game. Like it wasn't like some of these other upsets where, you know, it was a close game and it was hard fought. Virginia was never in that game. You know, and that's not a great way to start, especially at a place that's had a lot of trouble. My most exciting to me is all three service academies won this weekend for the first time in Lord knows how long. And Army actually
2006.
Army beat Temple, for crying out
loud. Like everyone I was about to ask.
Something in the American.
Army actually won? Wow, I did not – I missed that one.
Oh. It did. Army put up – let me pull the numbers up real quick. 300 and some odd yards on off. They put up 329 yards on the ground against Temple.
Whew.
Good for them. I mean, yeah. I've been waiting to see that program turn around, and a 1-0 is a good way to start the season, no matter who you are.
Jeff Monken needed a win. I mean, he's had some rough years.
All right, Tommy, you've been sitting in silence over there.
Most disappointing to me is Christian McCaffrey didn't even account for 200 yards in his opening debut. I expect my preseason Heisman favorite to do better. And I don't think that's because Kansas State's that good. So that was my biggest disappointment.
He had less yards against Northwestern, though, last year in their first game.
It's true, but still, he's a year older, and I expected him to come out with a chip on his shoulder from getting snubbed last year. So a little disappointed there. I'll be looking for a bounce back for them next week. My happiest moment was last night seeing FSU get another quarterback who can run and throw the ball. I don't know. I know, Nigel, we watched some of it together, but, I mean, the guy can throw bullets, he can throw darts, and as Nigel said, I didn't know that boy had wings because he can fly. So it's really good to see Jimbo Fisher have a quarterback, because that's what he has made his career off of, is having a good quarterback and coaching him up, and I think it makes all of college football better when they have somebody electrifying there.
Tommy's always excited to see a good FSU quarterback because he knows he'll be going to Tampa Bay in a few years. He's really pumped up.
That's true. We also saw the second coming of Aguayo.
Aguayo.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Aguayo.
I like Ricky as a better – I think Ricky is a more fun name. Oh, Ricky, he's
Does
so
anybody fun. Know, did they have a third brother?
I don't know.
Because if not, their mom needs to get on that.
They're actually lying.
Another game that just started off utterly abysmal was the Indiana-Florida International game, where the score one time was 3-2. Indiana then kicked field goal to make it 5-3.
That was one of those scores we joked about before the season started. Oh my god. But again, you knew what you were getting yourself into when you turned that game on, though. So I don't know why that surprises.
The South Carolina Vanderbilt game was pretty bad too.
It was fun to watch, though.
Hey,
talent on defense, you know, and I must chant, hold one out. They may go 6-6. You know, you don't want to crown anybody too early, but
in the SEC East, that's a pretty big deal right now. I mean, look, Kentucky.
Well, let's look down it. Mississippi State next week. If we look at South Carolina.
Look, we're gonna talk more about our predictions in a bit, but for right now, we're gonna keep moving forward. So, Andrew, we've talked about it a lot in our previous cast, and it's your big moment. I want to hear Week One, the Fish Report. Who
it
you
is,
got?
It is the Week One debut of the Fish Smithson Report, which got off to a fantastic start, where the Kansas Jayhawks broke their 13-game losing streak by beating Rhode Island 55-6. Great job, Kansas. So, no Fish Smithson report is complete without Mr. Smithson's line from that game. He had 4 total tackles, 3 solo tackles, 1 assist, and 1 pass defended.
Oh, wow.
His long-lost cousin, Weston Steelhammer, the safety at Air Force, had 4 tackles, 2 solo, 2 assist. The all-name player in a losing effort, unfortunately, Equanimeous St. Brown, wide receiver at Notre Dame, 5 catches for 75 yards. He did have 2 touchdowns.
Dang.
Treon Gibson, the running back in New Mexico, 8 carries for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's a 22.6 yards average per carry in a 48-21 win for the Lobos over South Dakota. And then great stats in the losing efforts. Kevin Davis, senior linebacker for Colorado State, in a 44-7 dismantling by the Buffaloes, had 19 total tackles, 17 solo, and 2 assists.
Oh my gosh. Somebody get that. That guy needs some water, man. Get him off the field. Oh, man.
Another shout out goes to Chris High, the Navy B-back, who had 10 carries for 176 yards and 2 touchdowns.
I was surprised. So you said Smithson had a pass defended. I'm like, wow, they were bold to even think that they could throw in his direction. Oh my gosh.
You cannot. That is Smithson Island. You cannot go there.
I mean, his showing was so good, they actually rushed the field after that win.
Unconfirmed reports say that he was carried off by his fellow players.
It's a beautiful thing. Oh, man. I do feel bad for the wide receiver at Notre Dame. You put in all that effort only to lose to Texas of all teams. Yeah. And you're not going to hear the end of it. People are just going to keep talking about that. Oh, all right. Moving forward, I'm looking forward to next week's report. That was a good first one. I want to hear more coming up.
We are going to weekly have the adventures of Fish Smithson and his long lost twin, Weston Steelhammer.
How did I not know about Weston Steelhammer? My gosh.
They had a third long lost cousin who played at Navy a couple years ago named Wave Rider.
That sounds like a boat I used to own. All right. Well, with that, we're going to move into Tommy and Nigel's report. This is the team stock market. So we're going to talk about Nigel is going to have to redefine our portfolios, tell us what teams are on the rise and what teams are sell in this market right now. Let's see. I mean, personally, I think I'm fine. I'm just buying everything that's Alabama, but maybe you've got some suggestions for anything else I should pick up. So I'll hand it over to you, Nigel.
I'm buying Texas, and I'm also buying, you know, I'm buying an option on Gilbert being the coordinator of the year for Texas. I think he's already shown me some magic. I don't know what they're paying him or how many bodies they're hiding for him, but, you know, they got him in there, and, I mean, it's just an automatic difference. It's night and day on offense. The defense is definitely taking a step up. You know, definitely happy for Charlie Strong. I'm selling LSU. Unless they make a change at quarterback, Brandon Harris, either they need to make a change at quarterback because he doesn't fit their system, or they need to get a system that fits Brandon Harris. He is not a traditional sit-back-in-the-pocket passer. Cam Cameron's offense is not going to fit him. So they make a change, I'm selling LSU.
I really expected you to say Tennessee, but I could see LSU. Yeah. All right, Tommy, you want to get in on this market right now?
If I had any stocks left, I'm selling all of them for USC. Just get out while you can.
Which was surprising. You thought they were going to do quite well this year.
Yeah, but that was because of my own personal bias.
Well, okay, so if you're selling all those, what would you buy into to replace it? I know it's not going to be Mississippi State.
Well, I'm buying into Louisville, and I'm buying into Florida State right now. I'm also buying into Texas, but Nigel already went over that. Basically, I'm looking for the guys who had quarterbacks that look like they're solid and they can stay calm under pressure, although we don't know that about Louisville because there was zero pressure in that game. But those are the two teams I'm looking at, Florida State and Louisville right now. I'm buying into them. Everybody else's stocks are either too volatile or trending downwards.
So talking about some long-term investments, guys that we were picking to make it to the playoffs, obviously Oklahoma is kind of falling apart. Where do you stand on Clemson after their performance against Auburn?
So Clemson and Florida State have to play each other, and that's what it's all going to come down to. One of those two, if they can win their games, when they end up meeting each other, and I believe that is October 29th, they're at Florida State. Whoever wins that game is probably going to win the ACC and probably going to get a playoff spot. I'm still, despite the rough showing week one, buying that the ACC and the SEC pretty much have two spots locked in. Of course, assuming nobody chokes and, you know, has two or three losses and still wins the conference. I think the Big Ten, the Big 12, and then Houston are going to be on the outside, are going to be fighting over those last two spots. In the Pac-12.
All right, fair enough. Andrew, I know you're not heavily invested in the stock market right now, but do you think that you should pick up some stocks in Houston as we stand?
I think Houston's a good buy. Obviously, Alabama's going to be a good buy. I'm going to sell some of my Florida stock. I was not impressed by what happened against what's really not a great UMass program. You know, that's one that I'm going to have questions about. I have dumped every last bit of Burt Bielema stock I ever had because that close win just doesn't cut it. And I am 100% buying in on rowing the boat.
Oh, I forgot about rowing the boat. Oh, Western Michigan taking out Northwestern.
Yeah, Andrew, how do you feel about that game? It was your dark horse favorite versus your MAC favorite.
Well, I mean, there's a reason I went 6-6 last week and I have a desk job.
I do feel a little bad. I mean, I saw that their punter did in fact average 51 yards per punt. It just didn't help Northwestern.
All victories.
Yeah, it makes
punters are people too.
It does make me happy though, because a lot of the pundits that you see on ESPN, they all went to Northwestern. So every time I have something to kind of
take that, Mike Greenberg, I'm calling you out.
What about Mike Willebon? You're not gonna go with that one? No.
No, Willebon and I are cool.
Okay.
Fair. Okay.
All right. So we're gonna move on, and I'm not even sure what the hell this is. But Tommy has prepared a special segment about Nigel's tinfoil hat theory on the U.S. preseason top 25 ranking. What, guys?
All right, Nigel, I'll let you you start it off to plead your case, and then I'll back you up on it.
Okay, so my conspiracy theory, I guess my first one of the season, is USC getting top 20 ranking in the preseason poll. My only reasoning that I can see that they got that ranking was because they were playing Alabama and would give Alabama's record a boost having beat a top 20 team. Now, where USC obviously ends the year, that may play a part into it, but I think it's just a good resume builder for Alabama to start the year, because there's no reason USC should have been ranked that high to start the season. I call ridiculous.
Okay. I could actually see that. So that's a start.
So, yeah, if we actually take a look at USC in 2015 and what they were able to do there, they had Cody Kessler as their quarterback. They had Clay Helton as their head coach interim, who was then given the job. So they've got a new coach. They've got a new quarterback. They lost a couple key positions on defense. Pretty much the best player they return is going to be either Juju Smith-Schuster at wide receiver or Adoree Jackson, their corner slash punt returner, which are both incredible talents. But USC, once again, they have a couple individual talents, but, you know, does a team that not make? So the fact that they were rated 20 just absolutely confounds me in any way, shape, or form, except for when Nigel brought that theory. And I was like, oh my God, he may be onto something. The real conspiracy theory, we figured it out. Why preseason rankings exist.
My only counter to that is, does Bama really need a bump early in the season? Because they're one of those teams where if they don't lose, they basically sit at one the whole time. So even if they played, I don't know, pick a team, App State, I don't know.
This is true.
But that's just a theory, a college football theory. All right, Andrew, I see you over there. I know you've got some kind of. Why did I open?
You mentioned App State.
Why did I open Pandora's
box? I've been thinking about an interesting conspiracy theory involving the Mountaineers. So App State is one of those teams, being a G5 Sun Belt program, that really likes to schedule the $1 million make money games. You know, they go, they get paid, they kind of lose. Well, because they're a program that have been really good, you know, knocked Michigan off, played Tennessee close. They're a program that have had trouble recently scheduling those big money games. So my somewhat super tinfoil hat theory is that kicker took a little money under the table to miss that field goal and miss that extra point in order for App to still have some ability to schedule these big money games to keep the athletic program running. Because everybody knows that them mountain folk, they aren't always the most law-abiding people.
This is true.
That one actually interests me more, because knowing the corrupt nature of NCAA teams, I could actually see that being a thing. But yeah, I mean, does anybody really look to regulate App State? That's the question that it becomes, especially for losing games.
True. I mean, throwing a game is still racketeering, so.
Yeah, but how often has the NCAA cracked down on teams for throwing games? That's the question.
I don't think you see a lot of point shaving in football just because it's so hard to do. I know it's happened in basketball. Boston College got killed in the 70s or the 80s for dealing with the mob, and I want to say Arizona State baseball got in trouble for point shaving a while back, but it's really not a football thing.
Yeah, you're right. It's hard to do. I mean, I kind of get behind that one, Andrew, just because I'm like, even if he's a freshman kicker, what kicker's that bad? Like, he's the best kicker you got. Like, have a student try out something. Like a girl. There's a girl out there who could probably kick the ball at least from 30 yards out. Like, he was just missing everything.
You could clone Aguayo and get another Aguayo brother and just put him out there, you know.
How do we know that the Aguayos themselves aren't clones?
Dude, that's my conspiracy theory.
Because, sure. Again, swamp people.
you can't regulate.
But that head of hair, like, wouldn't you think they would have cloned the other direction to get that beautiful mane on all of them?
I don't know.
Maybe they put all of their engineering and research into kicking.
They probably, that's the deal, they probably took it from a leg hair, and that's where it came from. So it just didn't come out quite right.
Logan's theory on the Aguayos. Their head hair is actually leg hair. That's your conspiracy theory of the week.
Because they were all cloned from kicker leg hair.
All right, well, I think we have officially covered the conspiracy theory section of the week. Do you guys have any other extra sections that I don't know about that you're going to throw in here randomly?
I mean, I did start thinking about the beautiful hair section, starting with Aguayo, and unfortunately, Jacob Eason. He has a magnificent mane under that helmet.
Ah, maybe he's born with it, or maybe it's Maybelline. I don't know.
I think that's makeup, not hair products.
You, Logan, are you taking sponsorship deals without telling us?
Yeah, well, if any sponsors are listening, I'll sell out in a heartbeat.
Yeah, look, the only sponsor that I will accept a deal from for free is Wendy's, because their Frosties are amazing. And right now, they're 50 cents per Frosty. So y'all should get out to the Wendy's right now. You can use a spoon or a fry or a straw. It's ridiculous. Anyway. yeah, so that's going to wrap us up for the week one recap. Thank you all for listening as always. If you like this and you've got any comments, please shoot us a contact at toemeetsleather.net, and we'll work on getting anything into our next post. Till next week, have a good day. Bye.